Hello, dedicated listeners, and welcome to the Culture Cadets, the podcast where three unqualified white guys over-explain your favorite pieces of media and video games. I'm joined by my co-host, Patrick Blaylock. Say hi, Patrick.
How you doing, folks?
And Noah Espinoza. Say hi.
Well, hey, I'm Noah.
So today we're going to be discussing the cultural impact of the Dark Souls series, as probably most of you are familiar with. It consists of many tangentially related games that not exactly in the same series, the first of which being Demon's Souls. Move on to Dark Souls 1 through 3, Bloodborne, Sekiro, and soon to be Elden Ring, which we are all pretty stoked about that. We're going to be discussing the cultural impact. We'll start off with a brief history of, what the game is and why it's important. We'll start discussing the overall, impact it's had on other forms of media and society, and then we'll close it off with our personal experiences. So, Dark Souls is renowned for its a hands-off but in-depth approach to storytelling and world-building. The company FromSoftware is very appreciated for its show-don't-tell approach, which is something that video games have always struggled with, like narrative construction and stuff like that. You guys remember playing Call of Duty 4 campaigns and stuff like that, or basically they're pretty rough. It's also critically acclaimed for its art direction and beautiful aesthetics, as well as its grueling difficulty and tight, unforgiving gameplay and combat mechanics. Its cultural influence isn't as widespread as something like it never got quite as big as the Elder Scrolls series that we talked about last episode.
I think that was last week or something.
Yeah, last week on our podcast. Why don't you give us some figures, Patrick? How much is Dark Souls sold compared to games like Skyrim? Tetris, I guess.
Compared specifically to Skyrim, and not even just the whole Elder Scrolls franchise, but Skyrim itself, which sold 30 million copies, the entire Dark Souls franchise from Dark Souls 1 to Dark Souls 3 has only sold 27 million.
What?
10 million of which came from Dark Souls 3 itself, nearly half there.
So yeah, it doesn't have quite the following that bigger AAA titles have, although I would consider From Software to be a kind of AAA game development company. They're pretty big. They put out a lot of stuff, and they put out highly refined and organized products.
Absolutely.
That's something that people really appreciate about them as a company. So while their influence isn't quite as widespread, I do think it runs a lot deeper than a lot of other things. Whereas a series I brought up Call of Duty. So series like Call of Duty, probably billions of people play Call of Duty at this point, but it is never going to be widely recognized. Okay, maybe billions was an overstatement.
If for those listeners at home there sitting on your couch, everyone besides our main culture cadet had a look of
I got some disappointing glares.
There was nope. I was facing the microphone.
Yes, no. Okay.
Anyways, series like Call of Duty and other AAA titles aren't renowned. They don't receive as much appreciation for their, solidity of structure and overall, creative and artistic design. Whereas Dark Souls really does. And I think because of that, and its kind of status as a cult classic, its influence runs a little bit deeper than some of those other things.
Absolutely.
That brings us to the cultural impact of it, across other forms of media. All right, yeah, so Patrick, what would you say is something remarkable you've seen about, From Software's influence on, the gaming community and stuff like that?
I'm going to tell you that when it comes to the Dark Souls franchise, even though it has less, 3 million less sales, right, than Skyrim specifically, which is still a significant number when you compare it to any other number in the world, is that its followers are very loyal, very dedicated, and very focused. Just really, the followers are just very... The people who play Dark Souls, they don't just play Dark Souls. They play it with a lot more adherence to what it expects from them. People who play Skyrim have fun and they run bow builds or magic builds. People who play Dark Souls get mad if you stack on dex instead of strength. They expect you to learn parry systems instead of just running through the game. And you can focus on the lore. There are a few streamers out there that do a lot of lore dedicated channels, but mostly Dark Souls is about the experience and the clout of having been a part of it, of having beaten it.
That is a big thing in the community, for sure. It's definitely known for its difficulty, and people latch onto that. You know, everyone likes to seem tough.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I also think that it kind of just within its overall aesthetic design and art direction and stuff like that, it kind of exists within a wave of sort of like nihilism or like grimdark fantasy, you know, whatever you want to call it, that's been present in a lot of other forms of media. Like, I don't know if any of you guys have watched, like, I don't know, any adult animated television recently, but it is some bummer stuff. Rick and Morty is all about hopelessness and, like, you know, pointlessness and toxicity. BoJack Horseman, that's depressing. And interestingly enough, I think Dark Souls kind of fits within that general, like, pattern. And I think, in a way, it's really driven a lot of that, you know, it's been a driving force in that.
Yeah, but not just nihilism and hopelessness is present in Dark Souls, because it really pushes you to expand on this very, very minuscule amount of hope that is given to you, maybe by an NPC, or even just by the small task of getting past a village full of dead farmers, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And it really pushes you to dig deep within yourself to find that kind of hope and project it into this world that is so bleak and grim.
I want to add to that. Not just because the world itself, or the storyline, or the conflict which is being applied to the story is hopeless in itself, but because you are just one human being in the situation. The player physically walking through the world, physically attempting to get from one checkpoint to another, is challenged to the point of hopelessness. And the game
so true.
Very comfortably has run that parallel, that parallel between, yes, the world is hopeless and the character you're playing is has the odds stacked against them, but also you as a human being with finite limits to your patience and how much energy and emotion you're willing to invest in a video game is being tried by how difficult it is.
Yeah, definitely. I'd say that too. Although it presents these themes of nihilism, it definitely, the point is overcoming that, you know, finding whether it's like meaning and just beating it, you know, whatever enjoyment you get from the world building and all that. It's about overcoming that. It's definitely a game about overcoming challenges and hopelessness and stuff like that. And that kind of brings us to something else I wanted to discuss a little more, like the actual gameplay, like mechanics, because I think that's deeply intertwined with you know, the storytelling aspect of Dark Souls. Especially compared to a game like Skyrim, since we've been talking about that a lot. It definitely takes a different approach to the way it's constructed. You know, in a open world RPGs, which Dark Souls is kind of an open world RPG, especially the like later ones. You kind of do whatever you want. There exists, I don't know, you go to a town and the blacksmith and you get quests from whoever and whatever. Dark Souls doesn't offer any of that warmth or comfort throughout its gameplay. You know, you're basically just put in this big, winding, intertwined world where damn near every single thing wants to hurt you or kill you or stop you from doing whatever you're trying to do. And within that lack of comfort and these very challenging, difficult fights, it drives you to keep pushing forward. And that's another way I think it's really impacted the general philosophies behind game design and stuff like that. Almost every game you see now that's come out after Dark Souls and is vaguely the same style has adopted in some form its combat mechanics or It's you know, it's like philosophies on aesthetic design. It is, you know, you basically see it everywhere. Like God of War got all Dark Souls'd out, you know, with the tight gameplay mechanics and like combat roles and, you know, parry system or whatever. Assassin's Creed, basically Dark Souls right now, and more games are styling themselves like that, to the point where, you know, that Souls-like is a genre of video games now.
And not just in the combat mechanics, but also in terms of how much or how little direction character is given. In Mario, if you start at the very beginning of time, Mario moved in one direction, and the screen told you which direction you were supposed to be walking. In Dark Souls, especially the first one, when your character is loaded into anything past the tutorial level, you are offered several paths, and some of them will outright just kill you if you try them, but others, it's a little bit more opaque whether or not you're actually meant to go this direction at this time. And I think that one of the ways that people refer to games as being Souls-like today is how much is the character being told up front about what they're expected to do and why.
All right, yeah, that's a great point, Patrick. Why don't we use this time to take a quick ad break, and then we will be right back with our Word of the Day segment. All right, so this episode is brought to you by Mr. Sheldon Incorporated. Have you been wondering what to do about those times when you don't feel great? Looking for someone to plan your parties for you? Well, fear not, because Mr. Sheldon Incorporated will plan your party for you. We'll take all the stress out of planning and just leave you with the fun. Whether it's Labor Day, Halloween, or just to otherwise take the stress and just focus on the fun with Mr. Sheldon Incorporated. Get 20% off booking when you use the promo code PartyBoy20 at MrSheldonsFakeWebsite.com. Book it today.
That's PartyBoy20.
PartyBoy20.
Use that.
Okay, and back from our ad break. All right, so today, our word of the day is, and Patrick, do you want to do this one for me? Because yes. I don't know how to pronounce it.
It's antithesis. And antithesis is the notion that man's actions are inherently, or that man is inherently good and a cause for good in this existence, in spite of the fact that some of us are not good or do not behave good all the time. And the reason that that is the word of the day is because one of the themes of Dark Souls is that human beings are, this is very specifically true to Dark Souls 1, sort of a plague on the world. The character enters the world at the end of the age where the gods were in charge. And the gods, have, being the stewards of the world, have lost control of it. And as human beings have risen to power, the vestiges of that previous system see them as sort of a plague on existence. But regardless of this, human beings haven't chosen to exist. No one in the world, and this is true of the real world, chooses to exist. So your actions, in that they prevent someone from destroying you, are inherently good, as long as those actions aren't untoward your fellow man. The actions we undertake on this planet, and, you know, depending on how misanthropic you are, you might not agree with this, are inherently good. Human beings are inherently good as long as their actions are towards the survival and function of the success of humanity.
That's deep.
And, you know, I do, humans do offer something, you know, just different. And, like, there is something special with us. You know, I've never been a godly man. I don't believe, you know, that we were, you know, creative, you know, that manifest destiny kind of thing. But the idea that our race, you know, the stuff that we've created, all these different things must continue in some way is something I do believe on some kind of level. And I think that that really does reflect in the themes of Dark Souls.
Whether or not we inherited this world from gods, whether or not we inherited this world from dinosaurs, it's our world now. Our actions absolutely, and we are stacked up against the odds. We are stacked up against ourselves. We are stacked up against a decaying climate and greed and corruption and many other things that we play video games specifically to avoid thinking about. But these are our real world bosses, and these are our real world adversaries. And the actions we take to defeat these things for the survival of our species, those are good things that we do. A bird is not considered a corrupt plague upon the world because it takes pieces of other things to build its nest. And the world that we build, the nest that we build for ourselves, it might look bad when it uses trees or plastic, but we created those things and we need them to survive and to move forward.
And, you know, we've been referring to this as just like the Dark Souls series and whatnot, but, you know, they have, you know, they've made a couple other games. For instance,
they did.
Yeah, Bloodborne, which is something that came out between Dark Souls 2 and 3, right, Patrick? Yeah,
2014, between Dark Souls 2 and 3, it was a H.P. Lovecraft-inspired Victorian England take, as opposed to their traditional fantasy knights and castles game. And the importance of that game, obviously, was not only was it a deviation from the knights and castles, which everyone was like, oh, is this going to be successful? Is this going to be famous? It also invigorated a huge interest in H.P. Lovecraft and a portion of society that had never even heard that name before.
Yeah, and what was interesting to me about that was they kind of sold it as like a, you know, Van Helsing kind of Victorian
thing. It definitely starts that way.
Like, yeah, it starts out like that. And then they really, before you know it, you're, you know, it's in that realm of Lovecraft. You're confronting these cosmic horrors and
great old ones and things like that.
Yeah, and that is a big thing. Like, I, especially before that game came out, like, I knew who Lovecraft was. Most people did, but, you know, like Cthulhu or whatever. But
right, that's
nothing,
all I knew.
Nothing, and frankly, Lovecraft's writing is pretty boring to read most of the time. So this really, I think Bloodborne really captured their, you know, the themes and concepts behind Lovecraft and presented it in a much more accessible, tasteful, and impactful way than some of those poems. I don't like Lovecraft very much, honestly. He was a racist.
I'm glad you mentioned that. Yeah. His work was entrenched in fear of the other, and the other was almost always immigrants.
Yeah, but that's what's another thing that's good about Bloodborne is they didn't do that.
Yeah, all the trench coats, none of the racism.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Love it.
We're seeing all these small, small developers kind of try to get the magic that, you know, it, like, find the magic that From Software found with Bloodborne and these other games and capture that again and, you know, with their own spin on it. And I think that's why I was saying From Software has had a less wide but a deeper influence than other AAA games. It's because the people who love these games are developers themselves. You know, they're people who really deeply care about this stuff, and, you know, it's an important part of their lives, and they bring that, the influence they found in Dark Souls, Bloodborne, whatever, they take that and they bring that into their own work. And you can see that, like I was saying before, basically every game has been Dark Souls'd, so to speak, up to some extent. If you're playing any kind of melee combat RPG game, whatever, you know, there's developers saw how Dark Souls worked mechanically as well as thematically, and they tried to capture that again, and that's huge. You know, that's something that you don't see really in a lot of ways. You don't see people making such, I don't want to call them faithful recreations because they are their own thing, but, you know, just trying to tap into that again, going back to Skyrim, because that was our last episode. Like, you'll see Bethesda style RPGs here and there, but no one tries to recreate them in their, you know, like, in a specific way. There may be some different takes on where they borrow some mechanics and stuff like that, but the reason they don't is because mechanically, it's not that great of a game. Like, it works, it's a good storytelling experience and stuff like that, but mechanically, it doesn't function in the same way that From Software games do. They're very, very tightly designed, well-oiled machines, and you're seeing that philosophy pop up more and more in other places. Instead of trying to make huge, expansive games, developers are now trying to make games that they might be smaller, they might be tiny, but they're trying to get what they're doing right, and they're doing it well. Like, I know you were a big fan of that Mortal Shell game, right, Patrick?
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, that was, again, basically Dark Souls, but they did it, and they did it in their own way, and they actually honestly captured some of the magic and aesthetic design that
flavored with a little bit of like Norwegian metal yeah, and rock.
Just a little it's black metal Dark Souls.
Yeah, it is.
Can't complain.
Attempting to recreate the immeasurable qualities of what you would call in the Elder Scrolls is just the immeasurable qualities of fantasy. Mm-hmm. When you create another game that's like the Elder Scrolls, all you're really doing is recreating fantasy. When you're recreating Dark Souls, what you're recreating isn't fantasy, it's that game. What you find immeasurable in Dark Souls is an inherent quality that's unique to the game. That's why people don't say, oh, it was like Skyrim. They just say, oh, it's a fantasy RPG. But when you play a game that's like Dark Souls, people say it's like Dark Souls.
Yeah, it's Dark Souls this, or Dark Souls that, or The Surge, or whatever. It's techno Dark Souls. You know, and I think the reason for that is it's such a pervasive game, not with the general consumer populace, although it is pretty dang big now. But like I said earlier, the creators are the ones that are really, you know, loving this. So although its influence is smaller, it runs much deeper than a lot of other things we've seen. All right, well, I think that is a good place to stop. We will be right back with an interview with a member of the YouTube content creation community, and we'll see what he has to say about this. Right, and we're back with an interview with our resident Dark Souls expert, Steven Stevo Page. Say hi, Stevo.
Hi, Stevo. No.
All right, so yeah, you're a content creator. You're active on YouTube a little bit. Tell us about your channel a little bit.
So my channel name is S Guy Red, all one word. And basically, what I started doing was mainly video game content. I would basically just commentate over me playing video games in an attempt to be funny. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it kind of the comedy wrote itself, and sometimes I had to really reach for it. So I've definitely got a little bit of content creation background under my belt now.
Yeah, that's good. The reason I brought you on here is because of that specifically. Because something the Dark Souls series is kind of known for is attracting. Like obsessive levels of interest in its right. In its creative community.
It's got a cult following for sure.
Yeah, yeah, and I know you're familiar with a few of those channels, like Vadi Vidya.
Yeah, I love Vadi.
For those of you who don't know, Vadi Vidya just releases these incredibly in-depth analysis and synopses of. Just Dark Souls lore, which I think we talked about a little bit already in the main podcast, is extremely vague and hard to follow. It's very much about environmental storytelling and stuff like that. But yeah, what do you think, why do you think the creative community has such a, like, obsessive level of interest with that? Because you don't really see that quite to the same extent in a lot of other places.
Right. I think it's mainly just because the game in itself is completely different from really anything else as far as like this genre of games goes. And so I feel like the fact that it's been so weirdly unique that it's kind of just caused interest.
Yeah, that is something that I think really draws people to it. It's kind of because it's familiar in ways, mm-hmm. but especially I feel like not always necessarily the gameplay or some of the mechanics, but just it's like design philosophies are incredibly unique. This is something we touched on in the interview too, but it's aesthetic principles and its artistic design is really like a leading factor with that. That's something we've all just been really into. So you are a huge Dark Souls fan. What would you say is your main attraction to the series?
My main attraction is definitely the, I guess you could call it the reward system. It's more so like most games like are known for holding your hand, like games like Elder Scrolls and like Oblivion and Skyrim and stuff. Like you have a map showing you where to go the entire time, so you know exactly where you're supposed to go, how to get there, and what you're gonna get. Like in the
game. The games want you to win.
Whereas like with Dark Souls, the only it basically fills its only obligation, which is to teach you how to play the game, and then that's it. You're on your own. As soon as you know the controls, like you are completely on your own, and just the game is notorious for being very difficult. And I think the thing that really attracted me to the game was like beating my first boss for the first time that I really struggled with, and finally just getting that feeling of relief after like beating a boss, like, oh, finally, dude, like I've been spending like half an hour trying to kill this guy, I finally did it. And it's just, I don't know, I love the challenge versus reward.
Yeah, that is something I don't think we touched, like we mentioned that it was challenging in the podcast, but we didn't really, we were talking a lot more about the, like, art and aesthetic principles, but I think that really fits within its, like, you know, kind of design philosophies, because, mm-hmm. you know, it's a very nihilistic, like, seeming...
Very
like,
punishing.
Seeming game, but it's, in overcoming those challenges, you know, you kind of, like, break through that nihilism and find something, like, you know,
It's like the developers were really just trying to, like... encourage you to just like overcome adversity kind of thing throughout the whole game.
Yeah, that's something,
no matter how difficult it may seem or how daunting it might be when it's in front of you.
Yeah, speaking of that, is there anything you like struggled to enjoy about the game?
While I do love how hard the game is, I absolutely hate how hard the game is. Because there are so many times where I constantly just flip-flop back and forth between how I feel about the game while I'm playing it. While I'm like doing good and I'm not dying, I'm like, yeah, this game's amazing, I'm gonna recommend it to all my friends, and then I die to a boss over and over and over again, and eventually like that level of enthusiasm dies very quickly every time that I do.
Oh yeah, it's sort of like, yeah, you
it,
like...
it just really breaks me down, and I get to a point where it's like, I swear to God, I'm gonna break this.
Yeah, I remember, because when the series like first came out, when Dark Souls was first released, I started playing that first one, and I think I started it once, and then like didn't even get past the first area, and just totally gave up. Just, you know, had that, you know, it just completely squashed me. And then I came back again eventually and got like halfway through it, but just again, just got totally stuck, frustrated to the point where like, yeah, I didn't want to do it. But eventually, when I finally came back to that game years later and beat it after all that like build up, like that reward system is a key part of it. They very much...
Absolutely.
They make you work for it. They know that that's how the brain works. And in an era of, like, I don't know, mobile games and games that are just designed to, you know, make it enjoyable for you to click on stuff, like, that's something special, I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah, what do you think is your, like, main takeaway from the series, then? Like, just a series across all of them, Bloodborne, Demon Souls, whatever, what do you think your main takeaway is?
I think my main takeaway is probably the little point that I touched on just a second ago, where I know it might seem a little weird for some people to, like, kind of really look too far into video games and stuff to really find meaning to apply to your life, but... I definitely did that with this series, especially with Dark Souls 1, the one that introduced me to this entire genre of games that kind of changed how games work now.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like, with how difficult everything, just overcoming adversity, just like, it's something you can really apply to everyday life. It's like, while I might not be able to do this now, through repetition and just getting better and stuff, no matter what you're doing, no matter what it is, eventually you're going to figure out how to do it along the way.
Yeah, and honestly, like, and I don't think that's silly at all. Like, that's something that, honestly, it did. It did change my approach to stuff like that. I was much more willing to, like, give up on stuff and not try, like, something that was challenging to me.
Mm-hmm.
I was much more willing to do that before I started getting into this series. I think that's a big impact of it. Like, you know, all of a sudden, people aren't afraid for, you know, games to be hard or for things to be hard or to make games that are difficult. You know, you mentioned earlier games like Elder Scrolls games like Ubisoft games, for instance, like Assassin's Creed. Those are all very about holding your hand, you know, like leading you.
Yeah, showing you where to go entire time.
Yeah, exactly where to go. Whereas, you know, that's kind of a new invention as far as, like, you know, games go. Like, I don't know if you remember playing video games back in the day. You know, when you were little, those were so... goddamn hard to figure out. Like,
oh, yeah.
I remember
being... like Legend of Zelda and stuff like games like that. Like, I tried playing Ocarina of Time when I was a kid, and I could not, for the life of me, figure anything out in the game. But then, and, like, even now, like, playing it when I'm, you know, in my late 20s, like, playing it out, like, it's still kind of, like, hard sometimes. But, yeah, the whole difficulty rise in the market and stuff is really, really apparent right now. Just because, like, people don't want to play easy games anymore. It's like, that's kind of how revolutionary this whole genre of games, this whole franchise has been in the video game community.
Yeah, yeah, because it feels as though, I don't know if gentrified is really the right word, but a lot of games have, like, you know, felt like that. Like, all of a sudden it's more of an amusement park or something. That mm-hmm. you're like, that's what Ubisoft RPGs yeah. feel like to me. Like, oh, I'm just walking to highlighted points on the map and, you know, waiting.
Everything's predetermined.
Yeah, having something fun happen. You know what I mean? It takes mm-hmm. it takes away a sense of, like, exploration and, like, you know, ingenuity. You know, just in that series, you feel so smart when you, like, find something or find a secret or get mm-hmm. something done because no one was helping you. It didn't feel like you were supposed to be able to do it half the time.
Yeah.
Like, and that's just, yeah, that's really important. So we kind of already answered this, but do you view it as, like, your overall feeling of the aesthetic of Dark Souls? Do you view it as, like, intentionally nihilistic or depressing, or do you feel like the developers really intended for your takeaway to be that hopeful feeling, like overcoming it in a world that wasn't meant for you to be able to, like, overcome it?
I think that's more so just a reflection of, I guess, my own, like, neuroses, I mm-hmm. guess, in a way, just like how my mind perceives things, how it will, like, where it finds lessons where it will. But I definitely agree that the developers, when creating this game, they definitely wanted it to be very punishing, very crushing. Like, even in things like Bloodborne, every dialogue thing that you hear is basically talking to you about, like you're worthless. Like, this game, the entire time, is trying to beat you down in every way possible. And so just every single turn that you come across in the game, it's constantly telling you, like, hey, you're nothing special. You're going to die over and over again. In Dark Souls 2, they literally start the game saying that. In one of the first cutscenes, one of the old witches that you talk to literally says, you're going to die over and over and over again, and it's going to break you. And that's exactly what the developer... I feel like that's not just, like, the character talking to your character. That's the developers talking to you.
Yeah.
It's basically them telling you, like, hey, expect this to happen because it's going to.
Which was great because, like, I saw Dark Souls 1 and I was like, oh, this looks like a fun fantasy RPG or whatever. Mm-hmm. It had no proclamations of... you're gonna hate your life while you're playing this.
Yeah. It was the first game to, like, really cause my heart rate to go up.
Oh, yeah.
The game would cause anxiety in me, where anytime I was in, like, a new boss fight or something, every single time, like, my hands are starting to sweat, my breathing is a little, like, sporadic, and, like, my heart rate is through the roof. And then, like, when I finally get that, like, victory achieved or whatever thing after killing the boss, like, immediately my heart rate would just plummet back to normal, and it's just, ugh.
You work up some anxiety about that stuff for sure. Mm-hmm. Like, and that's something, I don't know, it kind of helped me deal with some feelings. I don't know, you're kind of training your brain to deal with frustration by putting yourself through this. I found a unique sense of, because, you know, after a while, you know, you're playing it and you get mad, you're like, oh, I lost so much progress, I died, or whatever, I didn't get the thing, or I've tried to beat this boss 40 freaking times.
Mm-hmm.
But then after so long of that, it's just like there's a certain zenness to it. Like, oh yeah, I've died 150 times in this one spot, or I lost my 2 million souls or whatever. Yeah, like you kind of learn to take things as they come.
Yeah, and it, like, really teaches you to assess the situation. Like, it makes you think. It's not just like, if I keep doing this exact same thing over and over again, eventually I'm going to get it. The failure that you keep going through over and over again causes you to reassess every situation. Like, okay, what am I doing wrong here? Like, mm-hmm. obviously, I've been trying to do the same thing. I keep dying in this exact way. I need to change something. And I feel like the game, like, they didn't necessarily intentionally mean to, like, cause people to assess the situation and, like, I don't know, become a, like, better problem solvers.
Mm-hmm.
But it's definitely something that has influenced players.
Oh yeah, something we touched on in the main part of the podcast was just its actual gameplay mechanics and why we think, although, like, series like games like Skyrim or, you know, whatever have sold you know, millions upon millions of more copies than anything in the Dark Souls series, I think.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, even though that's the case, and its influence is, you know, much more widespread throughout, like, little cultural things and stuff like that, Dark Souls series influence runs much deeper, and I think that's because it resonated so much with not only the people, like, playing it, and, like, you know, enjoying it on a casual level. In fact, it seems to really detract, like, it seems to deter people specifically from enjoying it on a casual level.
Yeah, like, absolutely.
No,
this game is not for scrubs, dude.
Yeah,
it's like, not... if you're a casual gamer, Dark Souls is not, it's not for you, dude.
Yeah, it's, yeah, it's...
there's no people that just casually enjoy Dark Souls. It's either people that, you know, people either can't stand the game because they've tried it and they can't do it, mm-hmm. or they're absolutely in love with the game and they're cult followers.
Yeah, it's weird. You don't see as much, like, it's very black and white with Dark Souls fan. No one's just like, oh yeah, I enjoyed it a little bit, but
yeah, no, it's either I hate that game or I love this game.
Yeah, people geek out about that, but especially like creators and developers and stuff like that. Like, we see that, like, people have just Dark Souls'd their games up at this point.
Yeah, like Souls-like is literally a game genre.
Oh yeah, yeah, it's a genre now. I think that's also one of the, like, least creative names for a genre. Is that the best
Souls
way we can,
like, yeah,
describe video games now? Oh, well, it's like
it's
this
Souls
video game.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, it's got Souls-like combat.
Well, hey, you want to plug your YouTube channel again? Where can we find you?
You can find me on YouTube. My name is SGuyRed. And, yeah, I just make a lot of goofy videos of me playing video games. Occasionally, I react to stuff. And I always try my best to be funny. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But
I think it works out quite a bit, actually. I've watched a lot of them at this point. Well, all right, well, thanks for coming on, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, we'll end it there. Heck yeah. Yeah, anyway, thanks for tuning in to Culture Cadets, everybody. You can find us on Spotify, iTunes, and Anchor. We also have a Twitter page if you want to follow us at Culture Cadets. And I'm Teo Hansen. If you want to hear more from me, you can read my blog at Compositionally Challenged on Substack. Anything you want to plug now?
No, I think I'm good for this week.
What about you, Patrick?
No, I'm good.
All right, well, thanks for tuning in, everybody.